Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. And my name is Urban Nugent. As always, I'm excited to be joined by my co-host and collaborator, Bridget Tyer. Bridget, how are you doing today?
Thank you for asking, Urban. I'm doing pretty well. I wonder if listeners can detect a bit of a cold in my voice. It has lingered for weeks. And so, you know, we just can't keep postponing recording, right? So we move forward and my voice probably sounds a little gravelly. But other than that, I'm doing well, thank you. And as we hit the record button, it is the end of March. And today, the sun is out and the temperatures are warming up. Gotta love it.
Love it.
So, Irvin, this is an interesting and juicy topic, I think. Why don't you tell our listeners about it?
Yeah, today's topic we're calling making workplace conflict more productive. And I think right at the beginning, I think it's important for us to say that conflict is inevitable. It's inevitable in the workplace. It's inevitable in our lives in general. And it's also important to say, because I think at times we have, when we hear this word conflict, what comes to mind is an image of destructive behaviors, you know? And I think it's important for us to understand that actually conflict can be productive. And it's about how we approach conflict. Now, how we approach conflict, of course, is many layered by our experiences, by how conflict was dealt with in our family of origin, by the workplace culture we go into. Every workplace is a culture around this, our own personal experiences with our friends. And so what's important to say is your response to conflict is under your control. What's not under control is how other people respond in the midst of conflict.
Yes. You mean we're not going to give people a secret lever?
Afraid not. Not when it comes to this one. Yeah. So I think today, let's just do that. Today, let's really focus in on what's under our control and how can we be more responsive and choose, you know, in the midst of conflict, what are some more productive responses for us? So, you know, as we begin, Bridget, there's one thing I always like to say. I always like to say we all have our conflict story about, you know, how we approach conflict, which has come from all of these experiences. So I'm curious, Bridget, what's your conflict story? What's been your experience of it and how have you approached it?
Well, it's interesting that you said part of the story comes from our family of origin because I know mine does. And I grew up in a family of four kids. I was the youngest. I had three older brothers. They were always in conflict. They were literally fighting each other with their fists, you know? And my parents were conflictual a lot. And I remember thinking, man, I don't like this. And I would try to tune it out. So part of my conflict story is I like to try to tune out conflict or smooth it over. So I became pretty skillful at learning how to smooth conflict over when and where I could, largely because to me, you know, as a child, it sounded scary.
Yeah.
And it felt threatening to my security and my safety. So I see that still showing up in adulthood. And of course, it's something I'm aware of and I've worked on to not be so quick to smooth over and to face more squarely into it. Work in progress.
Yeah.
Work in progress. Yeah. How about you?
Well, you know, again, I think family of origin and then also for me, just the cultural upbringing that I had being a child of the Troubles. I think I've mentioned this before. I grew up in the north part of Ireland, right as basically civil war was all around us. So I grew up in conflict. And one would think you can go a few ways with that. You can become very comfortable or, in my case, very uncomfortable. So therefore, the way that I have approached conflict is not to approach it, is to avoid conflict, is to feel uncomfortable with the tension of conflict. There is part of me that is very uncomfortable when situations have not been resolved. And part of conflict, you know, is there are lingering situations that are tense that haven't been resolved. And there's nothing wrong with that. It just is, because some situations take a longer time. I don't like that. I like a little bow being tied and things resolved. So I think part of that, you know, for me, it still rears. I mean, I think for the way I liken this is it is my home base and it's going to be there with me. But I've come to recognize it, and I've come to recognize that at times it can get me into trouble, and at times I have to be able to allow the discomfort of what the conflict is causing, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Oh, that I love the way you said it's your home base, and it will be with you, and yet you have learned to run to first base and maybe second or third, right?
Yep.
Like you, and I think that's so lovely, because while we might always have a bit of our default with us, we can, through practice and learning, widen our range of how we deal with conflict. And it sounds like that's what you've done.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Now, as I'm listening to you, we have some similarities, right? You know, I'm a smoother and avoider, and you're an avoider, which doesn't surprise me at all. I'm curious, what your partner, Fred, like, does he have the same home base as you with conflict? Because my husband does not have the same home base as I do.
No, Fred is pretty much more direct with that. And if there's conflict, he will be direct. And so sometimes I like to say there's a little dance that goes on between us.
Yes.
Where he will move in and I'll move back, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. And it is very interesting, you know, for him, you know, if there's something, let's go in. And even if what he says is not nuanced or diplomatic, I'm always much more concerned about what's said and how it's said, et cetera. And for him, it's like, no, let's just have it out. So it's a very different approach. Yeah.
Okay. Identical to my dance. With my husband, Doug, he's much more direct. He doesn't find discomfort in conflict. He just wants to, let's just get it out and let's resolve it. And like you said about your partner, you know, he doesn't really, I mean, he's changed over the years and gotten much, much more attuned to this, but he's not as worried about how things come out. Let's get them out, you know? Now, I find it fascinating that you and I have similar conflict styles and have married people with the opposite conflict styles. And I wonder if our listeners are also shaking their heads and going, same here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, which makes it all the more important that we learn to flex, right? We move off of home base, because we're not going to necessarily work with or marry people with the same conflict style.
Yeah.
Let's get into a little bit of the neuroscience here, because we try when it seems appropriate to share some insights from neuroscience. And I think there are some about the brain and conflict, aren't there?
There are. And I think for listeners who've joined us many, many episodes, that this will not be new to them. Because in a way, when we're in the midst of conflict, how the brain shows up and what we go through is very similar to anxiety. And we've talked about the brain on anxiety. What happens, first of all, is when we experience conflict, we have a part of our brain called the limbic system, which is part of the brain that regulates emotions and behaviors. And this is, you know, we're very used to the term fight, flight, or freeze. And this is the part of the brain where that comes from. And so what's happening is the brain, of course, is very alert. It is scanning for threat. Because the most important thing as human beings is to survive. And of course, conflict is threat, because conflict is disagreement, and conflict, just say, could end up in a fight. Conflict. So the brain is always on alert. And depending on the intensity of the conflict, you know, if the conflict's about where you should eat tonight, no big deal. But, you know, if the conflict is about the relationship or how people are treating each other, et cetera, it can get very intense. And there's a term that we've also used before called the amygdala hijack. And that is that the brain gets so overwhelmed by what's happening in this and feels so threatened that we lose access to the prefrontal cortex. And why is that important? Because the prefrontal cortex is where we have our empathy and our decision-making and our problem-solving and much more. So what happens in the intensity of that conflict, we lose access to all the different elements, the thinking, the rational part of our brain, which is going to help temper or in some way come to terms with this conversation that's needed in this conflict. And so that's why some people will lash out. People will say things that they don't mean later will regret. They'll say, why did I say that in the moment? And some people will just shut down, you know, and other people run away literally from the conflict. And of course, then the other part of her brain, which is called the thalamus, which is a great storyteller, means, you know, whenever we're in that kind of intensity about our conflict, what's really interesting is that we will only take in data that justifies how we feel. So in other words, we will only take in anything that is backing our situation, our cause, the way we feel. And we don't have this wider perspective to take in maybe perhaps other issues, other data that's very important. And so that's our default, and it is to react, which really is not very productive. How might we start changing that? Because ultimately, that is not a recipe for productive conflict.
It sure isn't. And the more reactive we become, the more we trigger other people around us, and then it just escalates and escalates, right?
Yeah.
So what it begins with, really, the process or the pathway to change begins with self-awareness, right? We can't change what we don't see.
Yeah.
And specifically, what we're really saying here is a greater awareness of how we respond when we feel triggered by conflict. How do we respond in our mind? What thoughts, automatic thoughts get generated? And then what automatic behaviors come from those thoughts?
Yeah.
And if we can be a good observer, a non-judgmental observer of that, that's a great place to start, right?
Yep.
So what are some of those automatic thoughts and reactive responses to conflict? And to our listeners, you know, we'll share some of these. Not all of them are true of you because you have your own conflict pattern, but some of them undoubtedly are. Be listening for what might be your most common responses to conflict, right? So the first one is defensiveness. Anybody ever gotten defensive? I think so. And so, you know, as you said, Irvin, our brain is designed to keep us safe. And if we're in a conflict and we're starting to feel threatened, the brain is all about, okay, what will make me safe here? And so we do not want to admit failure, vulnerability, or weakness when we feel unsafe. We're just not going to do it. If we feel safe, we might say, you know, I really got that wrong. But remember, if we're being triggered, it's all about protection. And so we defend ourselves. And some of those thoughts behind that defensive language and behavior might be, I shouldn't be blamed for this.
Yeah.
This is not my fault. It's your fault. I can't believe you're coming at me with this.
Yeah.
So that's common. Another common reactive response in conflict is dismissing opinions, not ours, but other people's. And this is a way to protect our ego. We do this when somebody else is painting a picture of us that we don't like, that scares us, that threatens us. They're telling us, when you did this, you made me feel this way, or you dropped the ball on this, and this is what happened to the project. And now we are starting to feel like our identity, our sense of self is under attack. And so the way to protect that is that we'll just override the other person.
Yeah.
We'll just exude absolute certainty in our position and relieve ourselves of any obligation to listen to the other point of view. And what's the thought behind that? Well, it's something like, you know what? There's really no other way to think about this. Nothing you say is going to change my mind.
Yeah.
And then there's one other one I want to share, and I'll be curious what you think, but caving in. Now, it's kind of surprising, like maybe being defensive and dismissive might seem to some of our listeners like what they do first. But for others, conflict is so uncomfortable, they want to relieve themselves of it, that they'll just cave in. Harmony is more important to them than their own rights and needs. And so they'll think to themselves, well, I don't want this to go any further. I don't want to upset this person anymore. And putting up a fight is just not worth it.
Yeah.
So I'll appease. I'll cave in. Irvin, what do you think? Are any of these things you relate to? And what would you add to the list?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think personally, I think if I had one there, it would be caving in. I think for me, this, I think it's part of it. I'm uncomfortable in the situation. And unless it's some up, you know, very important, I'll say it's just not worth it. And actually, I had a client last week who's exactly that. They were actually going through annual performance reviews. And they have one very difficult client who really likes to pick fights. And the response back was, you know, well, how did you deal with that? And said, I didn't deal with it. And I said, what happened? And they go, it's just not worth it. It's not worth, if I give this score, I know it will just be endless griping and conflict. And really at the end of the day, is it that important? Mm-hmm. And which is interesting, it's led into a really interesting coaching conversation. Well, is it important? I mean, are you passing the buck to someone else? Etc. So it was a really fruitful conversation. But below that, that awareness, you know, of it's not worth it. Why get into this conflict? And so you could see that the one tendency was caving in. Now, what's interesting is there actually is another way that people can show up in conflict, which was the opposite person in this case. And that is sometimes people react in conflict by overpowering others. So by their sheer force, by the power at their disposal, the way they deal with conflict is, you know, this kind of scorched earth, that through my power, I will win this conflict. And, you know, it's interesting how this happens. It happens in two different ways. It happens first where people will use organizational authority. So they'll say something about the rules of the organization. Well, you can't do that. The rules say this. And so they'll use the organization to kind of beat someone over the head, or else just by their sheer personal, strong, vocal. You know, we've all been in meetings where you have that very strong personality. And whenever, you know, the bear kind of, you know, is brought out and kind of growls, et cetera, everyone, you know, falls into compliance. And you know, some of the thoughts, you know, is, yeah, I'm not going to quit until I win. I don't care what it takes. So you've got the opposite. The other one is, you know, I really care what people think, and therefore I'll give in. And this one is, I don't care. You know, I'll get what I want. So that kind of overpowered. And then there's another one, which actually is very difficult to deal with, but I see it a lot. And that is a passive aggressive approach to conflict. And of course, you know, passive aggressive is, instead of this direct approach, you know, we talked about Fred at the beginning, you know, Fred's very direct. You don't have to guess what he's thinking in the moment. This one is, of course, you know, it's anger about what's happening, but it's done in an indirect way through a myriad of different ways, you know, either being ignored, or there's eye rolling, or there's nitpicking, you know. And so it's not outright hostility as such, but it's there below the surface, and it comes up. And of course, you know, really it's about punishing someone, not so much that you could be called out in it. And of course, the other person, if you pointed it out, the person, that's not what I meant.
Yeah.
You know, you were rolling your eyes. No, I didn't roll my eyes. No, so in other words, you know, it's subtle enough that they can't be called out of it. And, you know, and so, you know, kind of what's the thinking here is, you know, I'm going to make my point, but I won't be the bad guy, you know, or the bad girl. I'm curious, Bridget, what have you seen as well with clients, and or what do they express their default maybe as when they approach conflict?
Yeah, well, I hear a lot of my clients complain about passive aggressive behavior.
Interesting. I think
that's something that they'll pick up on, and they don't know what to do with it because of what you just said. I think that's very common in the workplace. Because, you know, what's at stake in the workplace might be your job. So you don't want to go too far, but maybe you don't know how to express conflict productively, but you're so frustrated. So you do it through those sort of sometimes they're not so nuanced, but those subtler things, nonverbal behavior, the eye rolling, you know, the arms crossed over the chest, the checking out. And it's one of the hardest ones, I think, for people to deal with. I want to go back, though, to that client that you mentioned that had kind of caved in and said it's just not worth it. And it led to a really productive, fruitful coaching conversation. And so where did he land on that? Did he decide it was important or he could let it go or what? Do you remember?
Yeah. So the conversation was really, we got into the great conversation about what is your responsibility and your role, and not just to yourself, to the organization and to the other person. And I said, you know, I wonder how many years has this person, because of this, slided by and never got a truthful review. I think that really was food for thought for them. And they said, you know, it's right, because nothing's going to change until someone. This is not all Pollyanna. This will be a painful thing. The person will probably react. And so I think they have another meeting coming up next month. And I think the person said, you know, I think upon reflection, I think this is an area of growth for me. And I just think I need to be more honest.
I love that. When we came in and say, it's just not worth it, sometimes we don't have a coach around to help us step back and say, is that what you really want? So I think this is why we're saying, start with an awareness of what are some of your automatic patterns in conflict, and can you become a good observer of them? When you see it in action, you can be curious about it and say, okay, well, that's one way to respond, but is it the way I want to be, you know? And the caving in thing, I think, is interesting, because when we do that, of course, what we're trying to do is avoid conflict, but we betray ourselves.
Yeah.
So, Irvin, if the first step is self-awareness, how do I automatically and instinctively respond to conflict? What's my home base? And that helps us a lot. Yeah. But then what do we do with that? Like, are there changes that we can make once we're aware of what our home base is?
So I think this is really great, because I think we get into patterns. And I think part of the pattern is we have these automatic thoughts. So hopefully one of those resonated with you. And then the important thing is, okay, this is a pattern I get into. I get into this thought and then I get a response, which really is not helpful, destructive. And so part of that then is, and why self-awareness is so important, is to be able to interrupt that, to be able to kind of shine light on this pattern, which is unproductive. And then to be able to say, okay, I need to reframe this. I need to get back some control in this situation, not have this automatic response, but actually have a more thoughtful response in the moment. Now, let's just call this out. This is not an easy thing. In the midst of conflict, it is very difficult at times to step back. But I think part of it is, once we recognize that we are in the midst of a pattern that's come up, once we acknowledge that we're in this, this is a thought pattern I've been in before, and this is what I normally do or normally say, and is this really in my long-term interests? I think we can actually then, you know, reframe, and maybe what is the most appropriate response? And I think there's three questions that I always suggest that can really help us do that. So I think the first question, you know, is this thought that I have actually valid or true? Is this a valid thought? Or is this part of some distorted thinking, et cetera? Am I overreacting or exaggerating the problem? And then the third one, is there another way I could look at this situation? Mm-hmm. Now, the wonderful thing is, I've got news for everyone. We're all going to fail at this. We are going to handle conflicts bad, and we are going to make poor choices. But here's the good news. The good news is these home bases show up time and time again. So if we mess up once, we are going to have another opportunity to go through this process again, which is why this, I think, is very helpful. My client before, the client that I brought up when I was talking about, for that client, what they were thinking was, you know, he was saying, you know, I want harmony more than I want to fix it.
Yeah.
And then I think part of that movement, then maybe the reframing was, you know, even if things may get uncomfortable, I need to do this for the good of the organization, myself, and the other person. So in other words, harmony is not most important here. What's important is this movement forward. So I think that's really important. Does that resonate with you, Bridget?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what came to my mind was I went to the the automatic response of either overpowering or dismissing, you know, others. Mm. And I was thinking about, well, how might somebody who has that tendency reframe their thought, right? So if the thought is, if I'm right and I know I'm right, I must make others know that I'm right.
Yeah.
It's sort of like the most important thing here is to be right and win this argument.
Yeah.
And then when you put that out, you can say, well, now is that thought, one, accurate, and two, in your best interest, right? And what might be a different way to look at it? You know, well, I may be right, but does making that my whole goal get me somewhere? Maybe not, you know? Yeah. But of course, as you said, Irvin, this ain't easy. And it takes a lot of diligent practice, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I think it's interesting. We've talked a little bit about patterns. We've talked about unproductive responses. Maybe we should move to Bridget. What are some more productive responses that you've seen kind of in conflict situations that were really helpful in making a conflict more productive?
Yeah, that's good. So we've painted a picture of what destruction looks like. Let's paint a picture of what constructive looks like. That's good. Okay, so certainly, and this is very basic, but we often forget to do it, acknowledging others' feelings, validating others' feelings. It doesn't mean you agree with the feeling. It just means they have a feeling and you can acknowledge it. That's so important. Instead of trying to convince people they shouldn't feel the way they feel, I think separating emotions from facts, you might feel a certain way. That's not the same thing as a fact. But again, it's okay to have the emotion, but emotion and facts are not synonymous. Oh, this one is really good. Taking ownership of your part. We have talked a lot, Irvin, about it. A resilient leader asks the question, what's my part in this?
Yeah.
And has the courage to not only ask the question, but then to be really curious about that and then own it. That's so important, because you're always playing some part in a conflict.
Yeah.
Right? I think showing flexibility and being willing to compromise, really good.
Yeah.
How about apologizing?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a big one. I'm sorry that what I said landed for you in such a negative place and it hurt you, your feelings, however the apology comes off.
Yeah.
And I think just trying to maintain respectful communication, things can get heated. That's okay. But we don't have to be disrespectful. So it's communicating from a basic premise of this other human being deserves to be treated with some respect. If it's a colleague, you know, if it's a family member. And I think one other thing I would say is, how about, like, even if you think you're right, and maybe you are, there might be points the other person is making that are fair.
Yeah.
So just saying something like, you know what? That's a valid point.
Yeah.
Boy, that goes a long way towards sucking some of the hot air out of it, right?
Yeah.
What do you think, Irvin?
Yeah, no, I love those. You know, one thing comes to mind to me, there probably is another episode in this one, but, you know, I remember I was working with a client around this, and we were talking about, you know, what often comes up in conflict is intention and impact. So in other words, a person, you know, comes to you and say, like you know, they're very hurt. And of course, we get defensive and that wasn't my intention. My intention was... And, you know, I remember in a conversation with a client, and I said, you know, how about we also take responsibility for the impact and not just the intention?
Mm.
And, you know, it kind of goes with the apologizing, you know, because very often we say, well, you know, I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean, that's not what I meant when I said that. To really, you know, instead of saying that, the first thing is, you know what? The impact of what I said, I'm seeing this has landed in a way that has made you very upset. And I just want to apologize for that. Without even saying that wasn't my intention, I am seeing the impact of this, and that is not the way I would have wanted this. I apologize for that. And I remember that was a huge thing. And actually, a person actually began with that, and actually the conflict, it said it was still very tense, but they said it was the key to really unlocking kind of and smoothing out kind of what had been just a very, very difficult relationship.
Oh, man, I love that. you know, what is your part in this is owning what you can and owning the impact. Doesn't mean, because how many times have we heard, well, that wasn't my intention?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, okay, yes, that's good to say. You know, boy, that wasn't my intention. And I see that it had such a negative impact on you. And for that, I'm sorry. And then to be curious and lean in and say, tell me more about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are such important behaviors. And to what you just said, if you just did one of them, it could be the turning point in a conflictual conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, Irvin. So we've talked about our automatic responses to conflict, our conflict story, our home base, how important it is to be aware of our default tendencies. And then what does some productive responses to conflict look like? What might you leave with our listeners? Bring it home and bottom line it into a core practice.
So here's something which is really, it's a little summary of what we've just discussed. And that is, perhaps I encourage you to keep a conflict log. You know, when you are struggling with a conflict, sometimes, you know, we don't show up our best and we're looking back at a situation and our behavior in that situation, what we thought, what we said, what we did. And I think there are three questions which are really great to journal a little better, to think about. First question is, what is the conflict situation? What is this really about? And just write about it. And a nice way of doing that, what do I think the issue is? And what does the other person think the issue is? Because sometimes there's the conflict. We don't agree on what the issue is. And then the second one is to some of that, what were some of my automatic thoughts? And how did I respond in that situation? What do I remember about both my thinking and my doing? And then the final one is, knowing that, is there a way of reframing my thought? And what could I have done different, or what could I have done better? And as I said, you know, these are patterns. So if we don't get it right first, we'll have other opportunities. But I think that can really help us, you know, shine a little light in this area, which for so many of us is a real struggle.
I really like that practice. It's like we're ending almost like we began when we talked about how self-awareness is the first step, right?
Yeah.
To getting better at this. And what you're suggesting to our listeners is, for a while, keep a log to deepen your own awareness of how you're interpreting conflict, how you're automatically responding to it, and what you might do differently next time. Yeah, that's beautiful. Well, Irvin, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation. It was fun talking to you about how we both have the same home base.
And there we have partners
who have very different ones from us.
Absolutely.
As long as we have a beating heart and a pulse, this is something we can get better at.
Yeah.
Conflict is inevitable as long as two or more people are together.
Amen.
And if we get better at this, think of the possibilities it creates for our families and for our workplaces. It's really something. Yeah. Thanks to our listeners, as always, for joining us for this conversation. We hope you found something in here that will help you navigate conflict more productively. And we will see you next time.
Bye-bye, everyone. Thanks for tuning in, and look forward to our next episode.